Japanese troops raped women, including white women, on many occasions during the initial blitzkrieg across Asia and the Pacific, as well as assaulting military and civilian nurses in Hong Kong. Some of the worst cases occurred when Japanese forces attacked the Netherlands East Indies, with its very large white population. Caucasian women and children were sexually assaulted at Tarakan, Manado, Bandung, Padang and Flores Island in 1942. At Blora, close to Semarang in Java, 20 European women and girls were imprisoned in two houses beside the main road. Over a period of 3 weeks, as Japanese units passed by these houses, the women and their daughters were brutally and repeatedly raped. The older women protested in vain to Japanese officers, who laughed in their faces, until one day a senior Japanese officer happened to pass by the houses and witness what his men were doing. He immediately ordered the assaults to cease, and the white women were sent to the relative safety of an internment camp. The Blora rapes highlighted the deplorable state of discipline that existed in the Japanese army regarding their treatment of non-combatants, and the sadism and brutality of the average young Japanese soldier who took part in these assaults with alacrity. Japanese soldiers treated the women of the occupied territories very badly indeed. In the Japanese military mind, women appear to have served but one purpose, to provide entertainment for their soldiers, and whether they provided that entertainment freely or through duress, both were equally acceptable. Japanese soldiers were able to obtain sex whilst on campaign through two main avenues. Firstly, there was rape. Wherever Japanese soldiers went, rape went with them. The taking of sex by force was often not an individual pursuit, but a group exercise encouraged by senior officers. The second way was to visit prostitutes, euphemistically known as comfort women. Entire battalions of young girls and women were attached to Japanese divisions in the field, and the supply of women regularly replenished. Most of these comfort women were not prostitutes, as the term implies some form of financial reward for sexual favours. Rather, they would be better described as sex slaves, young women forced to give their bodies to the Japanese, often on pain of death. When Japan launched its undeclared war against China in 1937, the world had soon noticed the Japanese soldiers' penchant for sexual assault of women in the field. Mass rape and mass murder had been practiced upon the Chinese populations of cities and villages right under the noses of the world's media. Foreign journalists had reported what was being done to Chinese women and girls, particularly in the devastated city of Nanking. But the Western powers had easily dismissed all of the evidence as not unexpected. After all, it was Asians making war upon Asians. So it was to come as a deeply unpleasant surprise to many Westerners when Japanese troops raped and assaulted white women with the same enthusiasm that they had previously reserved for the Chinese. The greatest sexual crime in history was committed by Japanese troops in the aforementioned Chinese capital city of Nanking in 1937-38, when hundreds of thousands of women and girls were raped, tortured, and often murdered by entire regiments of Japanese troops without any sanction from senior officers. After such experiences in China, often officially sanctioned by senior commanders, the army that was unleashed upon the rest of Asia on the 7th of December 1941 consisted in large part of young men who had been brutalized through such behavior. Many undoubtedly equated rape with normal aspects of soldiering, as normal to the Japanese as cutting the heads of surrendered prisoners of war or killing oneself to avoid the disgrace of capture. The training and subsequent battle experiences of many Japanese soldiers had perverted their sense of morality, coupled with their desire to follow orders to the letter and not stand apart from the group that was, and still is, such anathema to many Asians. The procurement and organization of women into comfort battalions is one of the most shocking aspects of the war in Asia. Soldiers raping women in captured towns and villages could be explained as brutality, the spoils of war, or race hatred, but the enslaving of hundreds of thousands of young women over many years and placing them into a very well-organized system of sexual exploitation demonstrates the abject lack of respect for females institutionally present throughout the Japanese armed forces. Even the term comfort women was derogatory and facetious. The women came from a variety of different nationalities and found themselves involved in this sex trade through a variety of different paths. This examination will concern itself primarily with the experiences of white and Eurasian females who ended up as comfort women. In the occupied Netherlands East Indies, Dutch women and those of mixed-race parentage were forced into sexual slavery, the details of which are only now beginning to emerge in the 21st century. For over 7 decades, the truth of what actually occurred to some of the civilian internment camps has been suppressed, largely because there was such violent abuse perpetrated and because of the shame felt by the innocent victims. The treatment these women endured was appalling in the extreme. Many never spoke of their terrible experiences at the hands of the Japanese after being released, neither to their families nor to war crimes investigators and later historians. The role of the Japanese military police, the Kempei Tai, in propagating this human misery was central to its development. The Kempei Tai was the all-powerful gendarmerie found throughout the occupied territories, charged with rooting out anti-Japanese elements among the local populations, arresting and torturing spies and saboteurs, administering and running the POW and internment camp system, and was also often responsible for organized criminal activities as well. One of the responsibilities of the Kempei Tai was to procure what they term prostitutes for Japanese units, to establish and run brothels in occupied territories, and to control those unfortunate women who were imprisoned within them. Between 1941 and 1945, anywhere between 60,000 and 200,000 young women of many creeds, colours and nationalities were forced into sexual slavery in military brothels by the Kempei Tai. Most were of Asian origin and came from Korea, China, and other occupied nations. In the beginning, some were recruited by offering attractive wages to real prostitutes. Later on, women who had had nothing to do with selling their bodies were deceived or simply forced into prostitution, some even being kidnapped or bought from their parents for this express purpose. Resistance was useless, as the Kempei Tai had very brutal methods for dealing with anyone who went against its will. The notion of attaching women to military formations in the field for the express sexual pleasure of soldiers has always been anathema to Western armies. But there is a difference in how the Japanese and Western nations view the entire concept of prostitution. The Japanese soldiers who raped and abused women, and often used military brothels, came from a country where prostitution was well organized and carried out quite openly. Indeed, across Asia, prostitution was part and parcel of everyday city life. This is much in evidence today in Bangkok, Shanghai, and Tokyo. In Japan, a huge industry catered for the sexual desires of Japanese men. Prostitution did not carry with it the stigma or shame associated with the sin-based Christian morality of the Western nations. Sex, both marital and extramarital, was viewed as natural and something to be enjoyed, and paying for sex carried little or no taboo in the Far East. The Japanese military implicitly believed that organized prostitution would serve the emperor's soldiers very well. Once the initial terrorization of the civilian population had passed and the occupation begun, Japanese soldiers still required access to women. Therefore, the provision of prostitutes would improve the morale and military effectiveness of Japanese soldiers, so the higher command logic went. Creating military brothels would assist the army in the control of sexually transmitted diseases, and so improve the general health of its soldiers. This was not a new idea. The British had organized military brothels for soldiers in India during the 19th century with these very ideas in mind. In the 1830s, venereal disease infection rates ran at between 32 and 45% in British regiments in India. One officer, Lieutenant Richard Purvis, joked at the experience and result of visiting a brothel. "One night with Venus, 6 days with Mercury," he said. The 1864 Contagious Diseases and Cantonment Act of India created regulated brothels, but outrage at home forced their closure, leading to another massive increase in sexual diseases among soldiers, as they had been forced to go to unregulated brothels once again. The great difference between what the British Army had tried in India and what the Japanese organized a century later was the manner in which the young women were recruited. The Japanese army was aware of the problems its soldiers caused with local populations in the occupied territories when they had raped and pillaged extensively during the initial invasions. Comfort stations, as the Kempeitai named brothels, should prevent Japanese soldiers from raping any more civilians, and thus prevent the rise of hostility among the peoples of occupied areas. As the Kempeitai job was the discovery of anti-Japanese plots, not providing ammunition for such plots in the first place was naturally a primary concern for the military police. Comfort women appeared to provide the simplest answer. Ultimately, however, the comfort stations did not stamp out casual Japanese sexual brutality towards women. The Japanese troops raped and assaulted females all through the war, both in combat theatres and behind the lines. Their attitude was based upon a belief in their own racial superiority and the worthlessness of their victims. "It didn't matter to us whether women lived or died," said Japanese veteran Anji Kaneko in 2007. "We were the Emperor's soldiers. Whether in military brothels or in the villages, we raped without reluctance." In the beginning, the Japanese tried to recruit professional prostitutes to support their armies in the field, and advertisements were placed in newspapers in Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and Manchukuo, occupied Manchuria. These sources rapidly dried up, and the recruitment also created a shortage of prostitutes elsewhere, particularly back in Japan. From recruiting professionals, the army was forced to turn to more direct methods to fill its brothels. Most came from the territories that had recently been conquered. The Kempeitai used all of its nefarious talents for intimidation and violence to force native women into sexual slavery. What occurred in occupied Java in the Dutch East Indies went even further, with the Kempeitai targeting white women for the first time. Although only about 300 Dutch women were ever forced to become comfort women, representing a tiny percentage of comfort women, their stories have been practically unheard of until quite recently, and sparked an outcry in the Netherlands. In January 1942, Japanese troops staged amphibious landings on the island of Java, the administrative capital of the Dutch East Indies. The islands of Borneo and Celebes were also invaded. At the time, British resistance in Singapore to the north was drawing to a close, and in the Philippines, General MacArthur's efforts to stop the Japanese ended in defeat and witnessed American forces trapped in the Bataan Peninsula and under siege on Corregidor Island in Manila Bay. Until the Japanese invasion, Java had also been the headquarters of ABDA, the American British Dutch Australian Command, headed by British General Sir Archibald Wavell. The island was defended by a mixture of British, Dutch, and American troops, backed up by a collection of locally raised Indonesian Home Guard units of untested ability. The Japanese quickly overwhelmed Allied resistance and occupied most of the island. Wavell and his staff fled ahead of the Japanese to India, and the Dutch East Indies archipelago was abandoned to the Japanese. On the 8th of March 1942, the Dutch general Hein ter Poorten formally surrendered, followed 2 days later by the British surrender, where Major General Harvey Sitwell capitulated. The Japanese staged further landings on Timor, Sumatra, the Moluccas, and the Sunda Islands, and after fierce engagements with small Allied forces, captured them all. Dutch, British, and American soldiers were disarmed and sent to some of the worst prisoner of war camps in Asia, where many thousands would die from disease, starvation, physical abuse, and arbitrary executions. By the latter half of 1942, the Japanese had also interned Allied civilians living in the Dutch East Indies, sending them to dreadful internment camps where conditions were almost as bad as those reserved for military prisoners, and that rated as some of the worst civilian prisons ever operated by the Japanese. Java was the center of this gulag system, as the island had had the biggest white population before the war. A staggering 150,000 Europeans were interned either as prisoners of war or civilian internees throughout the Dutch East Indies, while a further 22,000 mainly mixed-race Indo-Dutch living on Java were permitted to remain at liberty outside of the camps. Some European men and women who were nationals of neutral countries such as Switzerland and Sweden, or countries that were friendly with Japan, such as Germany and Italy, were not interned either. Everyone, regardless of nationality or status, was subject to the suspicions of the Kempei Tai, who viewed all non-Japanese as potential security threats. A Swiss or German passport did not save many from seeing the inside of a Kempei Tai torture chamber or from a bullet. Java was administered by the Japanese 16th Army, which was under the control of the 7th Army headquarters located in recently captured Singapore. The organization of army brothels was not centralized. Instead, local 16th Army officers ordered the local field Kempei Tai to begin establishing comfort houses for the garrison. The commissariat officer of the 16th Army was ordered by the chief of staff to issue licenses to brothels. A license would only be issued if the prostitutes had signed a document that stated that they were working voluntarily for the army as sex workers. The Japanese evidently had an eye on any future prosecutions concerning coercion. The Kempei Tai did use coercion and sometimes violence to obtain the necessary signatures on their forms, and then these were forwarded to 16th Army headquarters in Batavia, now Jakarta. The women who ended up in the comfort houses were from several different national groups. Some were Japanese or Koreans that had been recruited and shipped in to service the troops, and were actually being paid. Others were Indonesian women who were recruited locally and had often been deceived into becoming sex workers by their Japanese procurers. A smaller number were European women who had been in the internment camps, and some were European women who, because of their nationality, had remained at liberty outside the camps when the Japanese occupation began. Up until mid-1943, native and non-interned European women were mainly recruited to act as housekeepers for individual Japanese officers or civilians. When Japanese troops wanted sex, they usually went to local brothels or to individual European or native prostitutes. The Kempei Tai instructed local hotel owners to convert their establishments into brothels in mid-1943. Prostitution was to be expanded. The Japanese decided to create brothels themed along the lines of race or nationality. For example, there were brothels that contained only Chinese women, and others that were staffed by Indonesians. Javanese women were transported in from the outlying islands to staff others, and European women were targeted for recruitment from the internment camps. Physical force was often used as the Kempei Tai established dozens of new brothels. Those employing European women were established at Batavia, Bandung, Pekalongan, Magalang, Semarang, and Bondowoso. This change of policy was probably due to the increasing evidence of venereal disease and the inability of the privately run brothels to remedy this problem. In addition, fewer European women were available for work in the brothels, as most of them, living outside the internment camps, preferred to establish a relationship as mistress to one Japanese man. The Kempei Tai looked at the camps in the Semarang area and saw a golden opportunity. They believed that among the 20,000 women interned in these camps, enough volunteers could be found to solve their recruitment problems. How white women ended up as comfort women in Java is complex. The women fell into three general categories. Firstly, there were those who had been working as prostitutes before the war and who continued in that profession after the Japanese occupation. Secondly, some women volunteered to leave the internment camps after being promised work as barmaids or waitresses to escape from the terrible conditions they found themselves living in, and were subsequently forced into prostitution by unsavory Japanese and Korean pimps. In June 1943, the Japanese owner of the Akebono restaurant in Batavia was instructed by the Kempei Tai to open a brothel. He opened an establishment called the Sakura, or Cherry Blossom Club, in new premises on Gang Horning. Of the 20 European women working at the Sakura Club, 11 had volunteered for the job to escape Sidang internment camp in the city. In late 1943, the Kempei Tai ordered the establishment of a second military brothel in Batavia for army officers. Called the Theresia or Shoko Club, it was located on Telok Betongweg and was run by a Japanese pimp. It used European women as procurers, and in December 1943, the Kempei Tai ordered him to obtain more white women. Using his European procurers, the pimp went to Chehapit internment camp in Bandung and successfully recruited 11 white women to work as prostitutes. The third group consisted of European women who were forcibly taken from the internment camps in groups and used as sex slaves by Japanese forces. Their stories make heart-rending reading. The Kempei Tai ran a recruitment drive at Muntilan internment camp near Magalang. In November 1943, a Japanese pimp from Magalang brothel and a local Kempei Tai officer jointly drew up a list of women in the camp deemed suitable to become comfort women. The Kempei Tai officer then contacted the camp leaders, asking them to recommend any women on the list who would be suitable to work as barmaids in Magalang. Although the offer of work sounded quite innocent, many of the older women were not so easily fooled by the Japanese, who they had quickly learned to mistrust deeply. They demanded to see the list. The names were all of young women and girls, and it did not take a genius to see what the Japanese were actually up to. On the 25th of January 1944, Kempei Tai troops arrived at Muntilan camp in a bus, bringing with them a copy of the aforementioned list. A tenko, or roll call, was immediately called, and the women on the list were ordered to go to the church, the camp being situated inside a monastery for an inspection. The camp leaders and the camp doctor followed behind, protesting loudly to the Japanese officers that this was illegal and against the Geneva Convention. When the Japanese tried to take the women, they sparked a riot. A large crowd of women and teenage boys had gathered outside the church where the Japanese were inspecting the women on the list. When the church door was flung open and the Kempei Tai tried to escort the women they had selected to the bus, violence flared. The furious internees, their patience already exhausted by the inhuman treatment that they had all suffered from the Japanese, began tearing at the earth and hurling clumps of dirt and stones at the Japanese. The Japanese reacted with customary brutality, officers even slashing at unarmed civilians with their swords. The Japanese managed to force their way through the crowd, and the young girls were roughly bundled aboard the bus and driven out of the camp, many of the mothers left behind screaming and tearing at their clothes in anguish and sorrow. 3 days after the riot, the Kempei Tai returned to Camp Muntilan. Another tenko was called, and the remaining prisoners were offered a proposal. The Japanese wanted volunteers to replace the women who had been forcibly taken on the bus. A few women, some of whom had been working as prostitutes before the war, volunteered, largely to save the younger girls from being raped. Most of these women were respectable married ladies. On the 28th of January 1944, 13 women from the camp were taken to Magalang. We were sent to an asylum from a detention camp and underwent a health inspection by Japanese doctors on February 3rd, recalled one woman who was 25 years old at the time. The women bunked two to a room at the brothel. After returning to our room, Miss Bracker and I closed all our windows and doors. Around 9 o'clock in the evening, we heard a knock. Military police forced us not to close the door. The military police brought a Japanese soldier, and we must accept the soldier. The military police forced us to do so, saying, "If you do not accept the soldier, your husband will be responsible for that." The brothel was open for officers on weekdays and for sergeants on Sunday afternoons. Sunday mornings was for private soldiers and sometimes for common Japanese people. We always resisted, but it was in vain. In February 1944, the Kempei Tai tried the same tactics again, visiting 7 of the women's internment camps on Java, but they were rebuffed at 3 of the camps after both the prisoners and the Japanese camp commandants opposed them. At the other 4 camps, the Kempei Tai, working closely with Japanese civilian pimps, managed to procure a handful of young women. The women who went with the Japanese largely volunteered to save others from this horror, or were simply selected against their will, roughly examined by doctors, raped, beaten, and forced to service Japanese soldiers. One woman attempted suicide, another faked insanity and was placed in an asylum, while another later had to have an abortion. The experience of one of these women was horrendous and demonstrates the whole sordid, depraved and inhuman nature of the ordeals that decent Dutch women were forced into by the Kempei Tai. Jan O'Hearn was an attractive young girl born in Bandung, Java in 1923. After the Japanese invasion, O'Hearn, along with her mother and two sisters, was imprisoned in a condemned army barracks at Ambarawa. "I'd been in the camp 2 years," recalled O'Hearn. "The Japanese gave an order that all young girls from 17 years and up had to line up in the compound. These high military officers walked towards us and started to eye us up and down, looking at our figures, looking at our legs, and it was obviously a selection process that was going to take place. The girls were herded aboard an open army truck and driven away as if we were cattle," she said, "and I remember we were so scared and clinging to our little suitcases and clinging to each other. They were taken to a large colonial house located 25 miles from the camp outside the town of Selarang. When we got to the house, we were told we were there for the sexual pleasure of the Japanese military. You know, our whole world just collapsed from under our feet, and we started protesting straight away. We said that we were forced into this, that they couldn't do this to us. They had no right to do this. It was against the Geneva Convention, and we would never do this. But they just laughed at us. You know, they just laughed. They said they could do with us what they liked." Portrait photographs were taken of the girls on arrival at the house, and these were displayed on the veranda so that Japanese soldiers could pick the one they liked. The Kempeitai named the brothel the House of the Seven Seas. "We were given flower names, and they were pinned to our doors," said O'Hearn. "They started to drag us away one by one, and I could hear all the screaming coming from the bedrooms, you know, and you just wait your turn." O'Hearn's time duly came. "There stood this large, fat, bald Japanese officer looking at me, grinning at me, and I put up an enormous fight, but he just dragged me to the bedroom. O'Hearn and the other girls were all virgins when they were assaulted. I said, 'I'm not going to do this,' and he said, 'Well, I will kill you. If you don't give yourself to me, I will kill you.' And he actually got out his sword. I went on my knees and said my prayers, and I felt God very close. I wasn't afraid to die." The Japanese officer had no intention of killing O'Hearn. "He just, you know, threw me on the bed, got hold of me, threw me on the bed and just tore off all my clothes and most brutally raped me. And I thought he would never stop. It was the most horrendous. And I never thought suffering could be that terrible." After the Japanese officer left the room, O'Hearn continued, "I thought, I want to go to the bathroom. I just want to wash this all away. I want to wash away all the shame, all the dirt. Just wash it away. Wash it away." When O'Hearn struggled into the bathroom, she found that the other girls were already there, and in a bad way. "We were all in there in the bathroom. You know, all totally hysterical and crying, and just trying to wash away the dirt. You know, the shame. Within one night, we had lost our youth. We were just such a pitiful little group of girls, and we were just embracing each other. And how many times was each one raped that night? You know, I shall never forget that first night, and we felt so helpless. This was going to happen from now on, night after night." The Kempeitai kept these young girls at the House of the Seven Seas for 4 long months. They lived in a state of constant fear. "I'll never forget that fear," said O'Hearn. "You know, it runs right through your body like electrical current, and it's a fear that has never left me. It's been with me all my life. I can feel that fear sometimes at night, because when it's dark, it means I'm going to be raped over and over again." Such was the level of fear and anxiety that O'Hearn was desperate to escape from the nightly rapes. You come to a stage where you think, "I've tried everything. What can I do? What can I do next? I cut off all my hair. I thought if I made myself look as ugly as possible, nobody would want me. It turned me into a curiosity object, and they wanted me even more because I was the girl that cut her hair off. We all want the bald girl." One of the reasons why the Kempeitai had started up the comfort stations was to control the spread of venereal disease in the army. Each week, army doctors checked O'Hearn and her fellow prisoners. If O'Hearn or the others thought that a doctor might be sympathetic to their plight, they reckoned wrongly, for Japanese military doctors were generally as unpleasant as other Japanese officers. "When the doctor came in, I went to him and said, 'Look, I want you to know we are here against our will. Use your influence. Go to the highest authority. Report this, that we are forced into this,' she said. The response of the doctor was extraordinary. He just laughed, and he ended up raping me himself. And from that time onwards, every time the doctor came for his regular visit, he used to rape me first." As well as being raped and sexually assaulted every day and night, the Dutch girls lived in constant fear of beatings and other physical violence. Japanese soldiers did what they liked to the girls, and many were extremely abusive towards white women. Those girls who unfortunately became pregnant were kicked in the stomach or thrown down the stairs to induce miscarriages. This just went on, you know, week after week, month after month, she said. We were total wrecks. I'd been beaten up so many times, recalled O'Hearn. Then, one day, the Kempeitais suddenly released the Dutch girls, and they were sent back to Munteland camp to be reunited with their families. The Kempeitai warned the girls not to speak of what had been done to them, otherwise they and their families would suffer the consequences. The reason for the sudden release of the white comfort women in the last week of April 1944 was an internal army investigation. A colonel from the Ministry of War in Tokyo had been making a routine inspection tour of civilian and military prison camps on Java. One of the camp leaders of Ambarara 9, whose daughter had been taken away, managed to arrange a meeting with the Japanese colonel to tell him what had happened. The colonel informed Batavia, Singapore, Southern Area Army Headquarters, and Tokyo of his findings, and recommended the immediate closure of the Semarang brothels. The headquarters at Batavia responded immediately by sending orders to this effect to the general responsible in Semarang. Many of these brothels later resumed operations, and instead of using European women, they forced mixed-race Eurasian girls to become comfort women instead. O'Hearn and her comrades were suddenly and unexpectedly reunited with their mothers back at the camp, but the psychological damage was enormous and obvious to their families. She said, "That first night back in the camp, I couldn't even talk or say anything to her. I can feel it now, laying in my mother's arms, you know, in the hollow of her arms around me. And then the next day, I told her what had happened to me, and so did the other girls. We had all these girls with all these mothers, and the mothers just couldn't cope with this story. This happened to their daughters, you know. It was too much for them. They couldn't cope with it. And we were only ever able to tell our mothers just once, and it was never talked of again. It was just too much for them." The end of the war brought some justice for those who had suffered such abuse at the hands of the Japanese. The Kempeitai major, who had been in charge of the forced recruitment of European women for Japanese comfort stations, was sentenced to death for war crimes. A few others were sent to prison, and one Japanese officer killed himself before he could be tried. The young Dutch women tried to pick up the pieces of their lives and begin again, but their terrible experience marked them for the rest of their lives. Jan O'Hearn married a British soldier who was part of a unit protecting the camp from violent Indonesian nationalists after the Japanese surrendered in 1945, and she later moved to Australia. She and several other Dutch women survivors of the brothels became very vocal in demanding an apology from the Japanese government, alongside thousands of Asian women who were also impressed as prostitutes. According to recent research, out of 200 to 300 Europeans who worked as comfort women in the Dutch East Indies, at least 65, like O'Hearn, were forced into this work by the Kempeitai. "It's absolutely appalling," said O'Hearn in 2007. "I am so angry that after all these years and so much proof, Japan is not owning up to their historical responsibilities. It is a lament common to all those victims of Japanese aggression during the Second World War, and a subject, sadly, as yet there is no happy ending, and as the Americans would term it, no closure for the victims of events that occurred over 7 decades ago."